sunshine, little Uber, liver, liver.
Good evening and welcome to As the Worm Turns. This is KVNF's live call-in gardening show. I am your host, Jill, and I am here with our regular worms, Lulu, Lance. Good evening.
Good evening.
Hello, everybody.
Great to see you again. And special guest, excited tonight to have Ron Godin here from the CSU Extension Office in Delta. Good
Hello,
evening.
Hello, everybody. Good evening.
Great to have Ron on the show again. He is a soil scientist. I'm going to learn something tonight, and I like that.
Well, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And you can call in and ask your questions to Ron and or Lulu Lance, 527-486-8166, KVNF now. And Ron, that CSU Extension office is a wealth of information.
We have lots and lots of information. We're obviously an extension of the university with all kinds of fact sheets on gardening, farming, bug control, beneficial insects, the whole soils, lots of stuff. We have agents that take care of, work with farmers, livestock, gardeners, master gardener programs.
Yeah.
Wow. We also have the master gardeners now are on duty every Wednesday morning for plant ID. If people have weeds they can't identify or plants that they don't know what they are, they can bring them in and or
oh,
insects,
great.
That kind of stuff down into Delta.
Great. Oh, wow. I like that.
Neat.
I had a bug land on me that blew me away. I was almost scared. It was like this huge wasp with this huge dangle off of its tail.
Hello.
Yeah. And it came in. It came in like a dive bomber, stealthy. Landed right on me. It's like, yeah.
You could have taken that down to the, well, if you caught it in a jar, you
no
could
way,
take it
man.
Down and, right.
I wasn't going to aggravate that thing even one tiny bit. I just sent it. I sent it every good vibration I had and asked it to go away.
On its way. There you go.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think, listeners may know or may not know that you can access that extension office and get all kinds of information about all kinds of different things and like to encourage that because, Lulu, you mentioned you learned a lot about gardening.
Oh, back in the day, there were a lot of gardening classes with the extension agents in Garfield County. So, and then we brought in guest speaker. I mean, it was really great. Yeah.
Yeah.
Lots and lots of information.
And if you move here from another area, it's a great place to go to kind of get a sense of how things are different here.
And it's all free.
Yes.
That's the rest of the good news is you can go get
everything.
These pamphlets. Do you guys have an office somewhere?
Yeah, we do on Dodge Street, right behind the courthouse
in
Delta.
Okay.
There's also an office in
that.
Montrose at the fairgrounds and in Mesa County at the fairgrounds.
And so you have like those racks with all the little sheets in them, fact sheets in them and stuff? Oh,
yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's all free.
Yeah. Lots of information.
Yeah. You can just cruise down there. You can take one of each and just have this encyclopedia right in front of you right there.
Yeah.
And it's all pertinent to this area. That's what's so cool.
Oh, you've got guys like Ron and a lot of other scientists working on it. It's great. And it's an extension of the university. So 527-486-8166, KVNF now. We are lucky to pick Ron's brain right here in person. Worm right into
tools
it.
Tools out. With turning worm.
Yeah. And
okay.
Can we talk about fruit trees? Can we start with that? Because there's some great fruit out there this year.
And lots of good fruit this year.
Yeah. And you've been doing work, some work with specifically peaches.
Specifically, we've been doing work on trying to, let's say, solve the gamosis problem because it's really turning into a really big headache for peach growers because it's spreading. And it basically kills a tree a lot sooner than it would normally. A tree with gamosis problems probably would live 15 years when without maybe 25 to 30 years.
Oh, wow.
So we're trying to figure it out. It's a fungal disease, and so we're looking at different treatments for it. Some conventional, but also the organic ones seem to be working. Tea tree oils that were scraping the gamosis off and painting the bark with tea tree oil. And that seems to be holding it back and curing it some. It's not perfect. We're seeing a little bit of leakage, but compared to what was there before, it's really lessened the effect of the gamosis. And a lot of it has to do also with practices of the growers.
Okay.
The branches that have gummosis, they should be cut off and burned, which is really important. You don't want to pile up your wood that you've pruned from your trees if it has gummosis and pile it up on the property and leave it there. It needs to be taken care of because those fungal spores will spread, right. even mm-hmm. from dead tree wood.
Wow.
How do you identify it? Can you see the fungus growing on the bark or the leaves?
Yep. Yeah. It mm-hmm. looks like a gumball. It looks like almost like a piece of amber, and it's pretty soft when you push it with your thumb. And you'll see it leaking from the trees. It's kind of an orangish, light orange mm-hmm. color. So it's fairly easy to identify.
Now, I had some on my little peach tree, and it turned out there were peach tree borers in there as well.
Yep. Any kind of bore or any kind of injury to the peach tree, whether it's like pruning in wintertime because the fungi is active in the winter.
Wow.
Because those little balls, when they reach 50 degrees, they'll sporulate. And here we have intense sunlight in the wintertime, mm-hmm. enough to warm up that gumball to 50 degrees if it's not too cold out.
Sure.
And it'll sporulate. And that's when we're pruning. And that's when there's cracking in the bark. And also with your borer, any point of entry that's made into the tree becomes a wound, and that's when it can get in.
Oh. Wow. Well, I dug all the borers out, or I tried to, you know, very mm-hmm. carefully. And then Dee Dee put some biodynamic tree paste on it. And prior to that, I had used a really weak, I don't know if anybody's going to freak out when I say this, but a really weak Clorox solution.
Bleach solution.
Yeah. Yeah. Uh-huh. And it totally worked. And the tree is healthy and bearing beautiful peaches.
Yeah, because you've covered up the wound and nothing else can get in now.
Yeah.
Cool. So. Yeah, and that's what you do with your organic treatment is you put it on there like a paste, kind of like you did with your...
Well, we paint it on, but you can do a paste also. We were trying different stuff. You could at least cover up the wound once you scrape off the gummosis. If it's not too widespread in the tree, it's feasible. But if it's just everywhere, it's better just to get rid of the tree.
Wow.
And that's what a lot of growers are doing in these really heavily infested trees. They're just cutting them down and putting in new orchards in.
Uh-huh. Wow, that's devastating.
Yeah, that's pretty harsh.
Story you told me about the peach grower that's doing the cover crops.
There's... when you grow fruit, if you take out stone fruit, you can't typically go back with stone fruit. You can't go stone fruit or palm to palm, or you can't take out apples and put in pears or apples because they get what they call what's called replant disease.
Okay.
We haven't specifically identified the cause of it, but my sort of guess and lots of other people's guesses is it's spread by nematodes. So the nematodes slowly attack the root system of the tree, and as the tree gets bigger, the nematode population gets bigger. So then they cut the tree down and take it out, and so there's millions of nematodes, and then they put a little bitty tree in there with just a small root system, and so you get a million nematodes attacking a small root system.
Right.
So you can't go right back after it. But I'm working with a grower in Palisade that's trying cover crops. Typically they say to wait 5 to 6 years between peaches, taking out a peach orchard and putting one back in the same place. So we're trying to cut that down to maybe 2 or 3 years by using cover crops of that are brassicas. Broccoli seems to work the best, and we're also using different kinds of mustards and planting them all in that field and doing a 2-year rotation.
Wow.
And we'll go back in and see what happens.
That's crazy.
That's so cool.
We've never talked about broccoli or mustards as cover crops.
No, that's why it was so interesting.
Yeah, and in a fruit orchard. That just sounds wild. And so that's helping to...
helping to clean the soil up and get rid of the nematodes.
Right.
Because it produces some kind of biological... I don't know. Killer for the...
Right? I mean, it's such a mystery. Yeah, the whole thing, we know so little about...
Well, we know it works, so we're...
And that's good enough.
And some mustards work. Yellow mustard works better than brown mustards and other mustards.
Uh-huh.
But some researchers around the country have found that broccoli, for some reason, works the best. And you don't have to grow it till you get broccoli, but you could. And then you just cut it down, and it will either reseed or you replant it the second time around.
Right.
And keep cover cropping to to get rid of the nematodes so you can replant sooner. Replant the peaches.
That is so cool. Mm-hmm. And so the stone fruits are the peaches,
apricots,
cherries,
nectarines,
plums.
Yeah. And so that's when you say you have a free stone. That's because the flesh comes away from
Opposed to the cling peaches, like the old Albertas were cling peaches. Yeah. Right. Now we eat stone peaches.
Uh-huh.
Oh, my God. That's what a cling peach is.
It clings to the pit.
Oh.
Right.
But it's a good canning peach.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I remember that from childhood, cling peaches. And when you bought them in the store, they were always cling peaches.
Mm-hmm. They were always canned peaches or cling peaches in the day. Yeah. But I have to tell you, just talking about canned peaches, I'm just going giddy out there looking at all this fruit and thinking about how am I going to get all this fruit off and how am I going to put it up? And it's so exciting. It's like food is just all around you.
Yeah, one piece at a time, Jill. One piece at a time.
Breathe.
Stay calm. It's going to be okay.
Yeah. We've got some sweet pea in here, Lance brought. That will calm you down.
There you go.
It's beautiful. Thank you, Lance.
It is. It's beautiful. What a fragrance, right? Oh.
Now, another thing that's affecting the soil and specifically even peach trees is the pH of the soil. Can you talk about that, Ron?
Correct. Typically, our native soils are around pH 7, which is neutral. But a lot of the orchards and land that we've been irrigating for 100 years, the pH is now close to 8. And the reason for that is that we have a lot of calcium in the soil. We call free calcium. It's not hooked up with anything just because of the nature of the soils. Our soils were old seabeds, shallow seabeds. There's a lot of calcium in the soil to start with, native. And so that combined with our irrigation water, which has really high carbonates in it, and it gets higher as the season goes on because the waters, they're less diluted.
Mm-hmm.
So if you irrigate with carbonate water which has carbonates in it and they combine with the calcium in the soil, calcium carbonate is lime. And so we're giant lime making factories. So over the 100 years we've been farming, the pHs are now near 8. And the more you irrigate, the higher the pH goes.
Okay.
And that's really hard on some fruit trees, peaches especially, because they're not what we call, they're not really good miners of micronutrients. When the pH gets real high, the micronutrients, metal micronutrients, we call them zinc, iron, manganese, iron, and boron, they get tied up. They turn into a rock, basically. When the soil is so basic and so alkaline, they turn into a rock. And unless you reduce the pH of the soil, they're going to stay as a rock, and the plants can't get those nutrients.
Right.
So it's like, again, like when we were kids, you put a nail in vinegar and it would start to dissolve the nail because of the acid. So it's the same principle. We still want to dissolve these minerals by reducing the pH of the soil. And there's several ways to do that. One is to treat the irrigation water to get the pH of the irrigation water down, because the research that I did, the pH of the water in this valley and anywhere in the western slope, I looked at the water pH. It starts in about 7.6 when the runoff, and then it just climbs to about 8.2 or 8.3 by the end of the season.
Yeah.
And so the pH of the soil tends to go towards the pH of the water. So it keeps going up. So we can add some horticultural vinegar, they call it. It's 28% to 30% vinegar. It's a concentrated, and you can drip it into your water. You can add it to your irrigation water if you have a drip system. If you just have a few trees, like maple trees or peach trees, what I recommend is taking a 5-gallon bucket and filling it mostly with water and put a quart of just household vinegar in it and water it with that once every week or two.
Oh my goodness.
That'll start to bring the pH down around your peach tree and it'll turn green again.
Wow. Is this industrial or this vinegar, horticultural vinegar, is that the same stuff we were talking about getting rid of bindweed?
It can be used in that way.
Same kind of thing.
Yeah. It'll burn. It won't get rid of bindweed, but it'll burn the tops and forces the bindweed to keep having to produce more green and depleting the root source, the energy source in the roots.
Fascinating. So this same product diluted is going to change the pH of your soil and even help your peach tree.
Yeah, but you can use household vinegar. And
like just regular white vinegar?
Regular white vinegar.
Yeah, that's cool. That's so inexpensive and so
accessible.
Right,
and it's easy to treat. And you'll start seeing, I'm starting to see it already this year, as the peach trees are starting to turn yellow. Huh. And that's because we had quite a bit of moisture, which is pH neutral during the wintertime. So that tends to bring the pH down a bit. But now with the irrigation, it's going back up and it's tying the nutrients back up. So the peach trees are starting to turn yellow again.
Yeah. My pear tree went last year went completely yellow. I thought, this is it. I got to cut it down. And I wasn't too upset by it because I could put a better shade tree there. And there's tons of pears all over the place anyway, so why? But I used an iron solution on it, and it worked.
Yep.
And the tree is really happy this year.
Yeah, because it's iron. It can't pick up iron.
Right, it just went cuckoo. It's just going off the charts.
Typically that's what we see, is iron gets tied up first before zinc and the other ones. And it's what we see mostly is iron deficiencies in some of these trees.
Oh, okay, yeah. Iron deficiency.
Yeah, I noticed that my peach trees and actually some of the plums and some of the apricots are starting to turn. And so just the other day, I used soil sulfur.
Right.
And it'll take a while, but I also had applied it in the fall.
Soil sulfur is another really good organic way to reduce pH. It's elemental sulfur, they call it, and it's just S. And what happens is when you incorporate it, it has to be incorporated into soil, either by irrigation or just by lightly raking it into the soil, because the bugs in the soil have to get at it for it to benefit us or to benefit the soil. And the bugs use it for their metabolism, and they oxidize the sulfur and make it turn to sulfate. That's just science technology. Remember that science is the art of making simple things complicated. So the bugs in the soil take the S and turn it to sulfate, but as a byproduct, we get sulfuric acid, which goes into the soil and starts to dissolve the lime and reduce the pH. And it works really well, but it takes a lot if you're just starting. I mean, it can take as much as, on a whole acre, maybe 500 pounds of sulfur on an acre to turn the trees green again.
Wow. Yeah.
But it takes it. Sometimes it could take a couple of years for it to completely dissolve and the bugs to use it all up.
And it's all about working that soil and making it active, right?
Active. Yeah, the bugs in the soil, the more they work, the faster this process will go.
Right. Hey, give us a call and let us know what's going on in your garden. We've got Ron Godin here from the CSU Extension Office. He is an organic soil scientist. We're at 527-486-8186 KVNF now. Let's talk about the health of the soil and the bugs and the worms and that kind of stuff.
Cover crops again.
We have to feed the bugs. To get an active, live, living soil, you have to feed the bugs.
Okay.
And the way to feed them mostly is with cover crops. There's a lot of new research going on now to reduce tillage but still increase the organic matter in the soil. And what they've come up with is cover crops and lots of different species of cover crops planted together. They're working on 10 and 12 different species of crops planted at the same time, even though you have cool season, warm season, legumes, grasses, plant them all together. And what happens is by using this lots of different cover crops, they take up lots of different niches in the soil with the roots. So lots and lots and lots of roots growing in the soil, and then we just cut the tops off and leave it for mulch. But the organic matter from the roots... The roots increase the organic matter in the soil without having to till it in.
Sure, that makes sense.
So we're doing lots and lots more work on that because we're trying to reduce tillage as much as possible, because every time you till, it introduces oxygen into the soil, which kills the bugs. It opens it up. You lose a lot of moisture. Up to 10 to 15% of the moisture in the soil goes just up in the air when you till, and carves up the worms. It just disturbs the whole system. So we want to do it as little as possible and try to increase organic matter with cover crops. And there's all different kinds of cover crops to use. Some help with weeds, like winter rye. Winter cover crops are great because you can plant them as late as September or even the middle of September. As long as they have 4 weeks to grow, they'll overwinter, like winter rye. And it'll come back. I've had really good luck when I was at the research station using winter rye to get rid of bindweed.
Oh, wow.
Just because it crowds it out, and it's the first thing. As mm-hmm. soon as it warms up in the spring, the winter rye will start growing.
Yeah.
And it shades out the bindweed because it's already up 8 or 10 inches right. first thing mm-hmm. before the bindweed really starts to crank. So I was able to just shade it out.
That's a good
over several years. Mm-hmm. But lots of different cover crops. You should plant some grasses, like a winter rye with a legume, like a hairy vetch is a good winter legume. So you can add nitrogen, and the cover crop is going to add, the rest of the cover crop is going to add carbon. So when you put it together, it will break down real easy and provide food for the microbes and all the bugs living in the soil.
Yeah, really diverse cover crops. You're talking before about broccoli and mustard. It's like we're mixing things up and finding that that works.
It works. Diversity is really the key to keeping a good organic garden.
Yeah.
Boy, I remember taking notes about a million years ago, and they were talking, and then all of a sudden that came in so clear, and I made this, I was doodling. In class, and I made this great picture with the diversity as the key, you know, and yeah, that's really it. It really is diversity. But my dilemma is that my gardens are small, you know, a home garden. And so what I do is I constantly add the soil that my chickens make mm-hmm. for me in the chicken yard, and I put that in, and like right now I have a compost tea brewing, and then in the fall just put the leaves on and just leave it. And this year I tilled before the soil got real hard and cracky. Uh-huh. That Lance and I, we were talking about that, how mm-hmm. there's like this 11th hour where all of a sudden the soil gets hard and you're doomed. It's too dry. And I tilled, probably about 10 minutes before the 11th hour. And it worked. And the soil stayed soft and loose. I have one garden that I haven't put my winter... kale, not winter, but my late kale and arugula and my freesia, and the soil is still loose and crumbly and like that. So in a small home garden, it's it's difficult to use those cover crops. So,
but when you take out an early, like when the tomatoes are done,
yeah,
you have time to plant a winter rye or winter wheat or a combination of winter crops in late mid-September once the tomatoes are all
out.
In
mm-hmm. yeah.
out.
Yeah.
It's tough if you don't have a lot of room.
Yeah.
But you I'd
can
like
just
to see
do
that
little
my...
strips. You can just do yeah. small strips.
Oh, well, mm-hmm. there's an idea.
Mm-hmm.
Everywhere yeah. where I put the mulch to walk on, I use hay. I just use barnyard hay. I just use hay. I don't use straw. And
you can just spread seed before you put the straw down, and it'll start coming up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
there
it'll
you go.
Be there.
Yeah.
Yeah. In August, I usually, by that time, I know exactly what I'm going to plant for the fall, and anything that comes blank after that or bare, I can plant stuff mm-hmm. like that.
You want to keep your soil covered all.
Yeah. Well, when the wheat comes out and the oats, I'll plant peas, and I'll plant peas to eat mm-hmm. if for a fall crop. I'll plant the pintos, and whatever space is not planted will go into buckwheat, or I have a field pea that's a cover crop.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, those are excellent.
Mm-hmm.
Buckwheat is really good because it's got a pretty deep taproot, and uh-huh. so it can bring nutrients down from deep down,
yeah.
where other crops wouldn't normally. Veg crops are more like 6-8 inches deep,
yeah.
but it can go down 2 feet and bring nutrients from down low up to into the plant, and then yeah. you have it for...
Right.
For fertilizer.
Right. One of the other problems I have in my garden is that there's a lot of shade. So by the time I'm taking things, you know, like the tomatoes are done or whatever, the sun is getting too low, and it's really, really shaded.
Plant those peas.
Just plant peas.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm going to do it. I love
there's
peas
even winter
anyway.
Peas you can plant.
Yeah.
The Austrian
winter pea.
Yeah.
The Austrian. Yeah, that's Willie's got that growing up on O Road up there, and it's just thick right now, and mm-hmm. it looks great, and it's the bindweed is out.
Right.
Yeah, and another thing that's nice, if you, the earlier plantings of buckwheat bloom, and there's the insects.
Yeah, oh gosh,
oh, nice. They have such a pretty plant bloom. For the insects.
Right, yeah. Nice.
Yeah.
Keep your soil covered, I think, if you just go with that. Mm-hmm. And when you think about it, yeah, your soil really does want to be covered.
Mm-hmm. What was the last time you were in, we were talking about the microorganisms, the soil bacteria that you can actually buy and put in the...
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I call them just microbial soups.
Yeah.
That you can buy, or if somebody has a lot of experience composting, you can get a few buckets of compost from a good compost pile and use that to inoculate, we call it, your soil and bring the good bugs in. But you got to feed them. They got to have something to eat.
Yeah, they can't. Otherwise,
they need organic matter, right?
They need lots of organic matter, and that's what keeps, and that's what keeps the soil fertile and keeps the cycles going and the veggies growing.
Right.
Yeah.
That's another pretty easy way to look at it. Feed the bugs.
Exactly.
Yeah, if you're not mulching and feeding your worms, you're going to lose them. The red wigglies, especially, they have a big appetite.
Mm-hmm.
They need a lot. They need a lot of forage. They really do.
Yeah, that's fascinating. We were talking about worms earlier, and Ron, you mentioned worms being at the top of the food chain. That's an interesting way to think about it.
They are in the soil.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they're like the birds of prey in a ecosystem. The worms are they're the predators in the soil system. So if you got lots of worms, you know you have a good, healthy soil system because they're eating what's left over and everything that's living in there at the same time
else.
And providing fertilizer and new bacteria and lots of stuff.
Well, and all those tunnels, air.
Air
oxygen
and water,
down deep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Which is tough because roots have to breathe. And so they make great tunnels.
Right. Little city going on down there.
And they still work all winter long. If you have mulch, if you mulch your soil through the winter, they'll slow way down, but they'll still work through the whole winter. They don't stop if it doesn't freeze solid.
Uh-huh. Yeah, okay.
Good to know.
I think I remember that 55 degrees was their optimum temperature.
That's when they start cranking.
Yeah.
That's my optimum temperature, too. I love that temperature. Hey,
well,
we have.
You are a worm.
That's right. Well, I'm a wannabe worm. You guys are the worms.
We're all turning.
We're all turning. That's right. Anthony from Paonia's on the line. Hi, Anthony.
Oh, hi, guys. Ron won't probably know this, but I've been calling these good people here for codley moth, and since you were talking about fruit trees, I wondered if you could describe to us their life cycle, because I see them as, you know, like we used to have kids, the reds. When are they coming? They're under the bed. They aren't hearing my pheromones. I want to disrupt their life cycle.
Well, there's several ways you can do it organically. Codley moth, we have three, sometimes four generations, depending on temperature. The hotter it is, the faster everything goes. And so in a really hot summer, if this summer stays hot, we may get to fourth generation. And they come out, they lay their eggs in the apple. You get the worm in the apple. That's the codling moth. So if you can prevent them from getting in the first place, and there are some coatings, clay coatings, I can't remember the name right. There's a clay coating that you can spray onto the apple that will slow them down, if not stop them.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the guys, the apple growers, do use this, the organic apple growers, and it works. It's not 100%. Nothing really is 100%, but that's one option. Another option is to put up bat boxes. And what this does is the bats fly at night, and so also the codling moths fly at night. So bats eat half their weight in insects every evening. It takes a while to get them established, but there's a trick that if you get some Chilean nitrate, which is actually bat droppings, and it's organic, and you spread it on the inside of the bat box, they'll come a lot sooner because they can smell that the bats have been there.
Great. Otherwise, it smells like home.
Smells like home, but otherwise it smells, if you make it out of plywood or wood, there's that wood smell, and they stay away until that's gone. But if you spread that nitrate, that'll get them in there a little quicker.
This has always amazed me, why we don't have bat colonies here like crazy.
Probably is not caves enough to house them. That's my guess.
Right.
But they need habitat.
They need habitat, right. But if I was an orchardist, I would be looking at bat towers and bat boxes and bat.
There are. They're common.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Other options are to use pheromones, which are allowed organically, and it's the female attractant. And it's just like on a twisty tie. And you put it throughout the orchard, and pheromones confuse the males. They think they're going for a female. It's easy to confuse males in this instance. So they don't mate.
Any instance.
They just go, they go for the pheromones on the little twisty ties instead of the female. So they don't mate, and it reduces the population. But you need a large enough orchard. If you just have two rows of trees, it doesn't work really great. But if you have a block, a 1 acre, 2 acre, 3 acre block, it tends to work much better. And they put more along the outside so that the collie moth doesn't get way into the orchard. The pheromone will stop them at the edges.
So a deterrent. Yeah. Right. Great. Well, so, Anthony, I hope that's helpful. We've got a lot of coddling moth discussion.
I don't have any yet.
Well, great.
What you're doing is working.
That's right. You're ready.
There you go.
All right.
Thanks a lot.
Thanks for the call.
Thanks.
All right. Well, that is bringing us to the end of the show. Ron, pleasure to have you here tonight. Learned a lot.
Thank you for having me. My pleasure.
Great information.
Yeah, Lance. Come again, will you, please?
Love to have you again.
Because it's really fascinating. I love it.
I know. I feel like I just got out of a school class. It was great.
Yeah, but it's better than that.
Better than that. Look at my notes. No doodles here.
No.
Just scientific scribbles.
Yeah, she's got pH and she's got numbers. I'm telling you. You should see.
Yeah. Well, it is Tara coming up for One Woman's Perspective. Lance, Lulu, and I will be back next week, next Tuesday, for As the Worm Turns. Thanks for listening to KVNF.
Have
Thanks,
a good Ron. Evening.
Good night.
Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Neon. You've got a cute face, pocket master, which you can make go slow and faster. I don't know who you took a shine to, or who you're about to make a sign to. I got a gal that I love so, low, little low and low.